He said, I think probably one of his friends in the Santa Cruz Police Department gave him a call that this was going on, and anyhow, he came rushing down there about halfway through the demonstration along with his protege, Mike Hernandez, proceeded to walk once through the picket line with the picketers that had been there for quite a while, and then stood down at the other end talking with the other side for the remainder of the time. I don't know if he managed to get a couple pictures of himself in the picket line or not, but once again, I see some real duplicity here. You know, one minute you're in the picket line, and the other minute you're talking to the other side, and of course, I'm sure he was doing it on our behalf, but he never did much to support labor when he was on the city council.
Well, that was a form of consensus.
Yeah, that's what maybe that's how that's what consensus is on both sides, you know.
Right, right.
Don't turn your back, but yeah, I support you.
Another. Quoting from his literature in 1976, Scott co-founded the Resource Center. He has worked for the Resource Center for most of the years since, focusing on nonviolence education, except, of course, for the local police, who, when they broke the ribs of a man named Jason and apparently caused a woman to miscarry at the May 1994 police riot, took no action to see that any kind of investigation happened into the police department. When I brought the issue up a year later with a videotape showing actions of the police and with testimony asking that the Citizens Police Review Board mandate, which covered the period started 3 weeks after that incident happened, he refused to even bring up extending it backward. So Kennedy's interest in dealing with police misconduct is even less than Mayor Sugar's interest, which is, I got to tell you, not been very strong, at least in terms of any actions he's taken.
I hope, and I do believe that all progressives on the council and soon to be on the council and in the community at large support a real police review board with civilian oversight of the police.
How can you believe that Mayor Sugar does that when for 5 months he postpones hearings, pays a $10,000 consultant from Palo Alto to sit around and twiddle his thumbs, although I guess he went to occasional CPRB board meetings, and excludes the public from this process? How can you believe that when no new meeting of this board has been scheduled, which is supposed to make new laws? How can you believe that when, other than one appearance next to Steve Argue, back 2 years ago when they were trying to look for a reopening of the Happy John Dine investigation, Sugar has taken no public stances in any significant way other than, I should say, I guess the no-knock law. I mean, he did stand up and say, finally, he agreed with Crone about the no-knock law. But in terms,
I think that was very courageous for both of them to appear at the trial of Steve Argue. And interestingly enough, I don't quite understand why the progressive district attorney filed felony charges against a little unarmed guy for hitting a big armed guy with his bare hand.
Don't make it appear that either Sugar or Crone supported Argue way. They did not.
They
in fact, Crone said,
heat over that.
Doesn't matter about political heat. I'm looking for political integrity. If you support someone, you support them. It's as simple as that. And that's something that Crone and Sugar apparently haven't been able to learn, or at least they don't feel that way on the issue of Steve Argue or of police review. You don't hear them talking about meaningful police review in all their 2 years.
Well, I think
so
that's,
I'm really
that's
tired
in
of
the
this
process
stuff.
Right now, Robert, and I know they had a meeting. You weren't able to make it to
They didn't have a meeting. They had a meeting without a quorum.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, a meeting without a quorum.
And they had no announced new meeting.
Which is troubling in itself that there wasn't a quorum. But, you know, I'm hoping that with a new council we will move fairly rapidly.
I was hoping with this new council we would be moving fairly rapidly. We're moving fairly rapidly nowhere.
Yeah. Well, I agree. There's a lot to be done in the police review.
And even if we don't move, Fred, they can speak out on the issue. And when they fail to speak out on the issue, it indicates to me that we aren't going to go anywhere, even if we get some better people, because you might see the kind of Kennedyization of the city council happening.
Yeah,
the Rotkinization of the city council. You see what happens
is
people come in as liberals, and they end up as in the pockets of the business people.
Well, that's definitely a possibility and a problem, Robert, and I'm hoping and I'm working, and even, I don't know if you want to go that far, because you've been in it longer and more disillusioned.
Did you kidnap Scott Kennedy? He's not here yet. It's 12:30. The man is late, man. L-A-T-E.
I hope
Scott Kennedy
didn't get a hold of him or something.
Maybe he'll be calling in, but let me give you a couple more references before we loosen up the phone lines. In 1990, after the devastation of the Loma Prieta earthquake, which destroyed much of the downtown, Scott was asked by affordable housing advocates to run for city council. Scott was elected to city council, served as mayor, re-elected in 94. In spite of a statewide recession, he helped forge a broad-based community consensus that resulted in the remarkable downtown recovery.
There's
now, what do you say to that one, man?
That word again, consensus, huh?
He's a consensus
man. That's not the guy I know. That's not the guy I've seen. I've seen you know, these very divisive actions like the beach plan, the Celia Scott for mayor incident. You know, that's the sort of guy I know, and the guy who says that he's being Mau Mau'd when citizens come out to protest his behavior. That doesn't seem to be conciliatory behavior.
Now, wait a minute. During his years on the council, Scott focused attention on affordable housing, preservation of the Greenbelt, strengthening city support for social services, public transportation, expanding youth services, and addressing the needs of homeless people.
Sounds like a real progressive, all right?
He certainly does. Mm. Scott also served on the Metropolitan Transit District Board of Directors and the Regional Transportation Commission, a veritable Tim Fitzmaurice, which he served for 2 years as chair. He supported expansion of bus service. Why are the bus routes all contracted? Mm. And reintroduction of passenger rail to Santa Cruz County.
That happened?
What's that?
Passenger rail to Santa Cruz?
I'm not aware that it's happened. Maybe it's...
I haven't seen any passengers.
I guess he supported that, but he didn't necessarily get it.
Yeah, well, that's an old trick. Like I say,
he's demonstrated his ability to work effectively with council members of differing views, as well as, city staff.
He works excellently with city staff.
He has worked with other municipalities, the county, and various regional, state, federal agencies. And then we have a number of issues. Support for homeless people. I will skip that because I'm the expert there, and you know nothing about that.
Not at all.
Open space preservation. He spearheaded the development of successful acquisition and funding strategies for Arena Gulch, Bombay, and Wavecrest Greenbelt properties and provided active support for improvement of other park facilities. Does that describe Scott's record on open space preservation?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, he was opposed. This is from the Scan Council Watch newsletter. He was opposed to the acquisition of the Bombay Greenbelt property.
Hmm.
And, you know, just from his record in general, such as things as wanting to pave 10% of Lighthouse Field, I don't really think that he should be stressing how good he is on greenbelts. I don't think greenbelts are to be paved, as far as I know, anyway. Just his general philosophy seems to be, like the downtown thing, bigger is better. The boardwalk expansion, bigger is better. I think he probably supported a large hotel conference center. Once again, bigger is better. That's sort of feeling I get about his support on open space and environmental
issues. Let's get to the nitty-gritty. Labor issues. Scott has been out front in the effort to get the city to approve prevailing wage, local preference. You laugh. What do you mean? Why are you laughing?
First of all, prevailing wage is required by state law, so I don't know how he can claim to have had anything to do with that unless he's been in the state legislature or working at that level. That's been a law for years.
Okay. Local, he's been out in front in an effort to get the city to approve local preference.
I'm not going to comment on that. That is a recent city law. He may have had something to do with it. I'm not going to feel like he was a leader in the fight because of the way I've seen him take credit for so many things that he actually opposed or was not involved with.
Scott has been out in front in the effort to get responsible bidder ordinances.
Well, that's absolute BS, okay? I mean, I brought that to his council and met nothing but total resistance from the city manager and from the council majority at that time. And we have seen the result of that malfeasance, and I'll use that word, with $6 million overruns on our police station, with the last four major construction projects, and probably it'll be five now with this company doing the river levy, being in court and costing hundreds of thousands of dollars in money for having to contest things in court because they were done shoddily, late, not at all, or whatever. The city of Santa Cruz is stuck in a position of going with the lowest bidder. As we all know, we used to listen to KFAT or whatever, and they had the 2-day contractor license course that any dummy could pass. That's all you need, apparently, to get a contract with the city of Santa Cruz, is to be lowest bidder and have this piece of paper that you got from your contractor's licensing course. What it results in is people that are unqualified to do the work. We don't check their success rate. We don't check their backgrounds and see what kind of problems they've had, if the people are happy with their work.
Does Ed Porter propose a different approach to
this? Definitely. Ed Porter, and I will quote you from his position statement here. Let's see. So many of them, it's hard to sort through them. But responsible contractors. City ordinance must be adhered to and strengthened. New state legislation enables and encourages cities to do so. The cost of not doing so is a liability. It results in staggering legal costs and even greater waste of public money because projects must be redone, or I will add, or litigated. And like I said, we've seen this time after time for the last 10 years. You get the cheapo lowball contractor in there, and typically, very often, if not always, non-union and even anti-union, the electrical contractor, the original electrical contractor, he folded midway through the job and left the city holding the bag with uncompleted work, which extended the date of when the city actually could use the building. He had a National Labor Relations Board appellate level conviction for discriminating against union members and saying he would never hire a union member. That was brought to the attention of the city manager's office and ultimately the city council with Mr. Kennedy on the council, and they didn't seem to feel like that was a problem, even though their own law that existed at the time said that they shouldn't hire that kind of a company. They nevertheless had no objections and said, oh, well, it's too late now, they already started the job, and you know, and they went along with it, and it cost the taxpayer hundreds of thousands of dollars as a result.
Wow. Well, we're talking, by the way, to Fred Geiger, and in the absence of Scott Kennedy in the studio, who has mysteriously not shown up.
Again?
You know, this makes his fifth unexcused absence. I may have to call for a vote of censure against the former council member.
So he actually gave you a firm commitment several times to appear, and hasn't shown up.
Four times he's given me a commitment, and the last time he apparently reassured my program director, Becky Johnson, that he would, in fact, be here at noon. Now, could have been he was hit by a car or possibly bushwhacked by an Ed Porter supporter. So we got to wait and see here.
Yeah, we have to wait and see. But that you know, that sort of just reminds me of what he's saying in his campaign literature. Is it trustable? Can you trust this guy? Is he who he says?
The answer is quite simple. No.
Does he do what he says he's going to do?
No, yeah. I don't think so. I mean, let me put it this way. I find his, I don't know whether I'd call it mendacity, that is to say lying, or whether I would say simply that the man's positions have become bad positions. But on terms of homeless issues, this is a man who, along with Catherine Byers, has supported closing the river levee so that you cannot walk up and down the river after dusk, it's illegal. He has supported the youth curfew, so it's illegal for a young person under 16 to be out after 11, mm-hmm. with some limited exceptions. He's supported criminalizing homeless people by default, the same way that Sugar, Fitzmaurice, and Crone showed a lack of any kind of commitment to taking meaningful action on changing the sleeping ban. They made these half-hearted efforts. They didn't put in the necessary facilities and the safe zones. They ran like rabbits when Byers, apparently under orders from Texas Instruments and Pantronics, or let's say under pressure. Why say orders when you can say pressure? Similarly, you have a situation where this kind of mentality of being afraid of what the businesses are going to say or the conservative residents in some bigoted neighborhoods are going to say. I'm afraid that Kennedy has reached the point where he has abandoned a civil liberties commitment, just as I don't see any kind of significant civil liberties commitment by our current city council, other than a kind of a, if somebody else does it, we'll support it kind of position.
Well, I don't know exactly what, you know, with Kennedy, you just listed a long list of actual votes and positions he's taken, so I would definitely agree with you on that. I'm not sure.
Would you like me to list Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar's actions?
If you feel like it. I mean, you know, is this about, you said civil liberties?
Well, I'm thinking of civil liberties for poor people. And I feel that, and I said this to Crone and Sugar before, that if you don't advocate for it verbally, you're not going to get it. You know, the idea of somehow this sneak approach, the stealth civil liberties approach, I think is...
Hello?
Is Scott Kennedy coming to your house? What's going on over there?
Uh-oh, yeah, let me check. Better make, who is this? No, it's not.
It's so not Scott.
I feel better. It's just one of the hardworking precincters that's been out precincting for Ed Porter.
Well, look, tell that Ed Porter to first of all get a somewhat thicker skin and realize that when we diss politicians who are in essence endangering the lives of homeless people and destroying their civil liberties, this is not a tea party where everything has to be said courteously 1,000 times.
Are you suggesting that I encourage Ed Porter to be rude, Robert?
I suggest you understand that there are going to be a wide variety of people in this campaign, and that if Porter wants to go out of his way to diss people who are outspoken like yours truly, I tend to draw the inference that Ed values form more than substance, and that I think is not necessarily true with Ed.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Robert, I got distracted for a moment there, but yeah, Ed. Well, yeah, Ed is a non-confrontative sort of person, but us to know him also realize he's an extremely principled person, and I think some of the things that maybe some of these people are a little bit older, like Dick DeBrava and Ed, bring is a lot of experience, and you know, they have convictions. They may not be fiery about their convictions, but I feel very good and very comfortable that they're very solid with their convictions, and that they also know how the process works, so they can go ahead and act upon their convictions, which, you know, is something. It's been tough for you know, the three guys, as they were called, to get very far, and not advocating positions, I know, irritates you. But nevertheless, you know, without the votes, what can you do? But I think
you can state your positions. Yeah, that's okay. For damn sure.
All right. So, you know, I think with only one or two more people on the council, which I think if we work hard, we can get, we will actually have a truly progressive council. They can work towards getting a really progressive city administration. Mm-hmm. I mean, look back to when, let's say, the West Cliff bicycle paths were built. You know, I mean, if someone was to propose something like that today, I would predict that the tourist industry and the businesses would come out and oppose it for some reason, you know, because it wasn't being spent on them, let's say, even though, in fact, when it's very good for them, just as I suggested to the meeting with the hospitality industry, that a TOT tax to help homeless people would actually benefit them, because tourists don't really appreciate having to walk around and seeing a lot of suffering and disadvantaged people. It would be in the interest of the tourist industry if we could help those people, but naturally they didn't want to see it that way. They only wanted to talk about how they were going to be losing business, which I think is ludicrous to say that $3 on a $150 a night hotel tab is going to somehow affect their bookings. One person went so far, and by the way, a prime Kennedy backer, as to say that, well, I'll probably have to go out of business.
You're not talking about Daryl Darling, right?
That might have been the guy.
Mm-hmm.
His West Cliff Drive.
The man
mansion.
Who killed the open-air shelter. I remember Daryl, but that's another story.
Yeah, his mm-hmm. West Cliff Drive mansion would be put out of business if people had to pay $3 more on a $150 a night hotel room. That's just the sort of narrow thinking that this industry, the tourist industry, I think, needs to overcome. And they need to realize they're part of the community. We put up with a lot of inconvenience from them for 4 months a year. They do contribute some funds to the city, but I think if it was to go to a vote, it would be just like many of the cities up and down, all the cities up and down the coast of California that had a large amusement park as we do. There was the one in San Diego, at Mission Beach. There was New Pike in Long Beach. There was Pacific Ocean Park in Venice, and there was one in San Francisco. Those have all been dismantled because the community did not feel that those businesses were in the community interest. So I think the tourist industry in this town needs to realize that if they don't want to have the same kind of reaction in the community, they need to start supporting the greater good of the community and not only their narrow, limited interest as far as their pocketbook.
Well, my reaction, of course, is a amazement that my planned interview with Scott Kennedy has turned into an interview with Fred Geiger by phone, and I find this, shall we say, dismaying. Geiger, you're not even running for city council. I mean, what's going on here?
Running from city council.
Yeah, well, now that's my line.
I made that up.
Oh, did you?
Well, you know, it's you have to admire some. There's two kinds of people that run for city council, in my view. There's people that are doing it for power, and there are people that are just basically down-to-earth good people that care about their community and are willing to make a big sacrifice to be on the city council and stay up there till 1 o'clock in the morning if need be to deal with the city's business. And I think you've got some people like that, you know, that are after the power. I think we've seen abuses of power by people like your absent guest when they were on the city council.
And like your pals in power, Sugar, Keith Sugar, who's continuing to, you know, to essentially exclude the public, continuing to engage in ruling. Well, I mean, cut back oral communications time. He's continuing to make rulings that show his contempt for public process. I guess what I would ask you to do with the candidates you support is make them come out with very particular proposals about real public access, maybe possibly like Santa Barbara has, where citizens can put things on the agenda, possibly a guarantee that there will be a meeting, not just like Christopher Crone has the day before the council meeting, but let's say a week before the council meeting, so items can actually go on the agenda from the citizenry.
Well, I do like your idea of the candidates and once they get elected, having a regular, you know, outside of the council meeting so that people can come and express their thoughts to them. Of course, I guess with Brown Act considerations, it would have to be less than a majority. But, the council's...
A process for the public to have access to the mechanism of government rather than through the vagaries. I mean, Keith Sugar and other people in power now, if they decide they don't want to talk to you, you're screwed. You know, what are you going to do? Stand up and have 3 minutes of oral communications. And there has to be a sense in which there has to be a mechanism of law that you can get access to the public process. I guess you can run around and get 15% of the signatures for an initiative, but that requires money.
Well, I guess that's what, you know, why there's public input on agenda items and also at oral communications.
Public input, if Keith Sugar remembers there's public input. He frequently forgets.
I'm sure you'll be there to remind him, Robert.
I'm there occasionally, but when he's reminded by letters pointing out that these are Brown Act violations, one hears only silence from his office.
Well, I imagine that you will get a response from that eventually. I know you're pursuing it.
You do, do you? You've got a big imagination on that one, I think.
I will, Robert. Well, especially if you're following through on it, as you say you are. I wanted to just bring up one other issue, and this is an issue that Scott Kennedy says he doesn't support district elections, and this is, I think, sort of also an attempt to appear progressive. I know the people that were involved with his and his protege Mike Hernandez's campaign certainly don't take that position, and I know from looking at the records that, let's say, that you mentioned the Darlings, the Haskells, people like that, and especially Karen Darling, put thousands of dollars into Mike Hernandez's campaign. They're not willing to oppose district elections, and I think that that's a sham, another position of Scott Kennedy's, that he's opposing it. It's merely an opportunistic approach. I'm surprised because I thought he was, like I said earlier, realizing that he wasn't going to get anywhere with progressives because people know better. He's not going to scan for the endorsement for him, and he says, because scan has become irrelevant, even though they managed to get their last three candidates all elected that they supported, because these candidates support what the city voters want. They want a clean environment, they care about social issues, and they want a livable community. But Scott apparently says that scan is irrelevant, he doesn't have to go there. I think it's because he is too well known there as having been supported there before and let the people down. But so he's going to other parts of the progressive community he hopes that don't know better, and he's coming up with these positions that try to make him look like a progressive. At the same time, we've gone over in this last hour almost this long list of places and issues where he didn't support or opposed progressive ideas. So it's just, you know, to me, appalling that someone will go that far at presenting themselves as somebody who they are not. And I wanted to just touch very briefly on this district election thing that we're saying now. Scott's not for district elections. Many progressives are not for district elections. And whether you're progressive or not, I think people need to realize that, using the Metro base as an example, if there were seven districts in Santa Cruz, and this happened in Supervisor Wormhout's district with the goat farm, and something is stuck in your district or it happens in your district, and the other districts don't really care. They're probably happy to have it there so it doesn't have to be in their backyard. You have no recourse under the district system except for to go to one person who is not by any means a majority on the city council and talk to them.
We will take up the district election matter in a future phone call.
Alrighty.
And I'm sure you can give us a strong series of arguments against district elections. My primary concern is that the passion for your supporters for not having district elections because of your bungling around the Metro base. I mean, your supporter, the folks who you support, your candidates, your people in office, have resulted in their doing a Kennedy, as I might say, on the sleeping van. They wouldn't put it on the ballot, and they are not acting to take any action on it. And I haven't heard your candidate, Porter, demanding action immediately. He should be demanding action from the council in September and October. He should be demanding that the three council candidates council members who are continuing in office take up a strong position on this. That's no skin off their nose. They're not running for re-election. Porter should be demanding that there be action taken in September on homeless situations so that we don't have criminalization going on. And if he doesn't take that position, then I'm afraid he is at variance with 2 years of commissions and $10,000 worth of expertise from the Homeless Issues Task Force, and I would say a majority of the people in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, well, that's a good consideration, Robert, and I think that what we...
So tell him to do it. You control him, right?
Yeah, right.
You're the man behind the scenes.
Yeah, I got all the dials right here on the back of my garage wall here.
Anyway, I'm hoping that he and the candidates that you have some access to will actually start talking about issues and encourage city council members to stand up on the issues, even if Crone hasn't got the votes, as he loves to say. Maybe he's got the balls to bring the issue forward so that we can see that it's not dead, and all he has to say is we need one more vote on this council and we can have a decent deal for homeless people.
Well, I think the candidates that are running, the what I see as the progressive candidates for council definitely want a decent deal for homeless.
I
want
to see Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice saying these things, and I want to see your candidates pushing them publicly
to say
this. I
want to be clear
things.
On something, though, Robert, because
yes.
I don't want to mislead anybody. I am not saying that I believe that they will support, let's say, the car camping thing that was recently tried, because I think it's been shown that there are probably a very small minority, but a very powerful minority of people that will do whatever it takes to sabotage that sort of a thing. And so maybe some other things like parking structure camping would be more appropriate.
Oh, but there'll be another minority that'll be out there to sabotage that. So every time a bigoted minority moves, Fred, you're going to kind of roll with the surf waves. You're going to surf the political scene looking for that non-bigoted minority somewhere, someday. See, that's the kind of attitude that I'm afraid is behind the four candidates coming in. And I think that attitude is death to basic civil rights to homeless people. And I think people who are listening to this show should know it's the same old shit unless we see some real new actions. Now, I've suggested that candidates put a couple thousand bucks into a fund, that they commit themselves to saying, I'm going to make it take action before Christmas. If it's a campground that Ed wants to open up, that's fine. I don't care. Let him push to open up a campground. I want to see him take action before Christmas on that issue, and if he doesn't take action, I want to see $2,000 go forfeited into a legal fund that will allow attorneys to act to decriminalize sleeping by judicial means.
Escrow fund, huh? Yeah. Well, I wish there was that kind of money floating around the campaigns, first of all, Robert.
How about $10? I mean, let's get something going here.
Probably $10.
Anyway, I got to roll because I do appreciate, Fred, you got Ed Porter's precinct things to walk, and I've got I'm wondering if Scott Kennedy maybe is sort of waiting
maybe
outside for you to hang up.
Yeah, maybe you should give him a chance to at least try to call in.
Maybe he will call in.
Yeah, if he actually does want to present his side, so that would be fair.
He's sure.
Show up as promised to give him a few minutes on the air, and I hope you will not let him say things that aren't true without correcting him. However.
I will give him the same dignity that I gave you.
Oh, boy. Well,
perhaps less.
All right, Robert. Take care.
All right.
See you.
And that was the notorious Fred Geiger, and we were on the line for a notorious hour. My apologies to all you trying to call in, and here is a caller. Free Radio here.
David Silva here. 60 minutes ago,
yes.
Fred Geiger read Ed Porter's position on the homeless.
Correct.
And I would like to call for every precinct walker and for Fred Geiger to stop walking precincts for Ed Porter immediately and walk over to his house. Because what Ed Porter suggests is exactly the same thing that Michael Hernandez and Catherine Byer suggest, which is giving luxury slave quarters for 5 or 10% of the slaves and letting the other 90% run out there free on a hunt to be manhunted.
Hmm.
Because it's decriminalization is a human rights issue and it can't be solved with social service programs.
Correct.
Now, Carl Wilson was talking to Ed Porter when Porter first was relaying to the Greens and the campaign and the sleeping ban, his position on the sleeping ban. He started giving us all the social service answers, and we said, no, you don't understand the question. Supposedly, he was supposed to have reviewed that and come up with a better position. This doesn't sound like he's come up with a better position. Now, I want to talk about Kennedy and Thinking Greens.
Mm-hmm.
Back in February, the Green Party County Council, at a very large meeting, voted that the sleeping ban would be a litmus test question on our endorsements. We're in the endorsement process right now. The candidate, in order to get endorsement from the Green Party, has to agree to vote when they become a city council member to repeal the sleeping ban, or else they do not get our endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
All the other questions aside. Now, Ed Porter is a very good green politician. He has wonderful ideas, but all of his ideas are going to require working with the business community. What is he going to end up being if he can't even get the difference between social services and human rights?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm calling for people to stop on the Ed Porter campaign, get over to Ed Porter's house, and figure out what the hell is going on with this wishy-washy actually coming up with the Hernandez Byer's position on homeless rights. We're talking about human rights here. We're not talking about social services. And I think you understand my analogy with the luxury slave quarters. You know, putting money in that'll serve 5 or 10% of the people and still having the rest of the people criminalized, it's just got to stop. And we are going to stop it in this town if we have to shut this town down.
I understand very well, David, because...
Okay. I can't believe that Fred Geiger fell for that.
We saw that...
And he has the nerve to read that on the air to satisfy us?
We saw, actually, this happening with Community
House. Sitting
here
60 minutes, seething.
You may remember... I'm sorry about that, And I'm sorry for all the rest of you listeners out there who haven't been able to get in.
Can't believe this.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
hard
to believe that that's going to be Ed Porter's position. And if that's going to be DeBrava's position, if that's going to be the other clan Scan Insider's position, they're going to be very surprised with the Green solid endorsements. And the Green team is going to be strong this time. So they better get on board. These Scan Insiders that are inbred and talking to themselves better get on board with human rights.
I would hope so, and I appreciate your putting it so eloquently, David.
Thank you.
All right. Always nice to have some commentary from the left, and here's another phone call. You're on free radio.
Yeah, at least I'm not running for city council.
Yeah, well, you're probably walking away from the city council, yes. So, Merlin, how are you, and what have you got to say about this debate, if anything?
Oh, between you and Scott Kennedy?
Well, Scott didn't show up, actually, so it was me and Fred debating.
I thought Fred was pretty boring, man. He had to run for city council.
I see.
But, no, really, you know, as far as the one thing Fred was talking about was how that the city takes the lowest bids for work being done. And I talked to Steve Argue, who's running for city council. Steve Argue's pro-union.
Right. I think Fred and Steve probably agree on that issue. But what have you got for me today there, Merlin?
I just want to let you know that as far as anybody running for city council and all that stuff, it seems like the only two people that are anywhere near realistic or have a grasp on reality is David Silva and Steve Argue.
Well, David, as you know, is not running. His health, I think, is not permitting it, although he did initially take out papers. He is not running, but Argue is running, and I guess there are a number of candidates who said they favor ending the sleeping ban. Jake Fathi, I believe, has said so. I'm not sure about others, and we're hoping to get a flyer out to people, a questionnaire from Huff. And in the next week, probably a week from today, we'll be able to tell you who says yes, who says no, and who won't talk.
Well, I still haven't got anything bad to say about Chris Crone, but everybody else seems to be...
I've got plenty of bad things to say about Chris
Crone. Well, I mean, he's trying to do a lot of good, though. He's tried.
Give me an example, please.
Well, trying to help, you know, all the things he did talk to David about, and then obviously everything changed.
No, Crone is an organization man. He rolls along with the rest of the party. We saw that in July 25th when he sold out David Silva on the sleeping ban initiative. He was supposed to make amendments to put it on the ballot, and instead we had this bizarre Fitzmaurice deal which said, well, how about putting on the ballot this idea that you'll be arrested if you sit in your car at night, but, you know, you'll be able to sleep on the sidewalk next to it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I just read in the Sentinel last week.
Wait a minute. What Crone did was, you know, we went to him and we said, let's make some changes to that so it might make some real sense. He listened to us. He nodded. He gave us his professorial, and what do you have to say? And what do you have to say? And he went around to each of the people. And then the next day at city council, he didn't let anybody talk. He moved to table it, and wham, bam, there's nothing on the ballot in November thanks to what he did. That's your man, Christopher Crone, on the sleeping ban.
Really?
Yeah. So,
I'd like to see Steve Argue get elected.
Yeah, me too. Let me roll on you though, because there are probably other callers eager to get in, and I've been let the phone lines be monopolized by me and Geiger for an hour, and I apologize again for that. But anything else you want to add, Merlin?
No, that's about it. You just a pretty good show.
Thank you.
Yep.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, this is your ever-faithful producer here,
calling
with an update on Scott Kennedy.
Oh, dear.
Yes, I called Scott Kennedy at home at 12:04 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
and his lovely wife answered, presumably, anyway,
mm-hmm.
and she put Scott on the phone, and I said, hi, it's Becky Johnson, and he says, oh, I forgot. I'm so sorry.
Ah,
I've been
a slip of the mind.
I've been sick in bed all day.
Ah.
I didn't go to church today because of the flu.
Did the dog eat the homework as well? That's what I'm wondering.
I'm so sorry. I said, well, that's okay, you know.
He's rescheduled.
Do you want to reschedule? And he says, I'd be happy to.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But he was too sick to call in, even.
He was too sick to call in. Yeah, that can happen, you know.
Yeah, so all this Scott bashing has to stop. You're talking about a sick man.
I see. Well, what exactly is his ailment?
The flu.
He has the flu.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he certainly has flown, and he flew, but I don't know if he... Well, I'm not going to second-guess an individual who's sick. Did he sound sick?
he did.
He did, well.
He sounded sick.
So the man has failed to make it because of the flu. Well, I notice on Scott Kennedy's literature that it states he has a coming out party or a kind of a kicking off party coming up. And for some reason, the place is not mentioned. It
really?
It says to make a phone call to find out when and where this is happening. So I'm going to suggest that listeners who want to come to the Kennedy for Council campaign kickoff, which is on Friday, September 1st, from 5 to 7, call 457-8003 for the location. You can also, by the way, come to the Scott Bugenthal, or Bugenthal, thank you very much, kickoff 4 to 6 today, and I believe, again, that address is at 1135 North Branciforte. I could be wrong about that, but that's what I heard from somebody.
Closely, conveniently located near DJ's Mini Mart.
There you go, so you can buy some soda and bring it along and not just be a leech. Anything else from the Scott Kennedy headquarters?
Well, that's all that we have to report today from his thing. I did want to have a correction for something earlier. When Scott Kennedy tore the sign down at City Hall mm-hmm. in 1996, the sign's edges were protruding.
I see. So this was kind of a gesture to decency. He didn't want the protruding sign edges to...
Well, as you know, as you recall, Robert,
I do remember this, actually. I'm going to cut you off because I don't... you're right. This was a ludicrous deal by Rotkin and Kennedy to enforce Picayune laws that were essentially designed to harass protesters and peaceful protesters in front of the City Hall, trying to get the sleeping ban, you may have heard of it, repealed in 1996. We, of course, have the same problem with the clowns at City Council now, so it's hard to say who's worse. I guess we have to say, though, that, as I said, Kennedy really has quite a legacy, as does Rotkin, of harassing homeless people around these issues in terms of particularly protesters, and it was particularly seen in that whole deal where the I don't know if did Kennedy vote for the injunction? Do you recall? I believe he did
because
that was an injunction against the mm-hmm. protesters. They tried to make
Celia Scott and Catherine Byers had asked to have the vote be made public, and it was a 5-2 vote.
Right, and I think it was those two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Kennedy's civil liberties record is, as far as I'm concerned, history. It ain't there anymore, and it probably wasn't since the early 90s. And folks should know that. And there's some people who like a police state where the police make decisions, and that's fine. I mean,
the police. They like that.
Well, I don't know if they like that. That puts a lot of responsibility in their hands and a lot of... I don't know if they really like it that much. I mean, but it certainly gets you a particular kind of police force and a particular kind of police service or lack of service. Anyway, so... Yeah.
And well, how about that police budget?
Hey, getting fatter than my belly, man. I'm going to play a little something now from Los Angeles, that involving the police and their attack on Monday, August 14th, where you yourself were actually hit, as I remember.
I had that close encounter with the LAPD that
I think they were trying to get you to,
not to have
join their club, or maybe they were going to club your joints or something.
They heard about my show, Club Cruise, and they just wanted to pay me a compliment.
Right, they took it too seriously. Well, I thank you for calling in.
All right.
Bye-bye. The phone just don't stop ringing. I suppose that's a good thing. Let's see, are we... You are on the air with Free Radio.
I'm sorry to call again. I got a little... little heated last time and hung up too early. I didn't want to talk about Kennedy and Thinking Greens. But I also want to first of all correct you. And the Sentinel promised to run both a correction and an apology about saying that I withdrew from the city council race because of illness. That's not true. The reason for withdrawing from the city council race is because I got my Section 8. And if you know anything about Section 8, most of the houses are down in Watsonville. They're not in Santa Cruz City. There's no guarantee that over the next 4 years, over the next 6 months, that I'll be a resident of Santa Cruz City. So it's not appropriate for me to run for city council. And that was the reason they promised to run that apology. Instead, they ran an article that made it sound like the HIV sickie is not going to run.
Yeah.
I really resent that, and I want people like you to stop repeating that it was because of my illness.
I promise not to repeat it again.
If anything, my fasting made me so healthy that I survived the experiment. What I did, and this is the actual details, is that we've been talking for a long time, my doctor and I, stopped the HIV meds entirely to see if I was one of those people that could maybe go without a year so I could stop the toxicity and so forth. And I'm one of those 10 to 20% people that get that it explodes on. So I had an explosion of the virus, and it just about, you know, did me in. But if it wasn't for me being so healthy from fasting, I may not have made it. So the story is just quite reverse of what's out there. People like Ed Porter have been listening to rumors and repeating rumors, and I really resent all
sure.
Those
well, I've
got a few people stopping those rumors. Now
I'll pass on the truth.
Nora's working on stopping those rumors.
Well, I'd be happy to work arm in arm with Nora in that matter.
Yeah, okay. Now, talking about Kennedy and Thinking Greens, there are a lot of Thinking Greens, and the Greens are more active than ever. We have more working groups than ever. We have a lot of participation, and we operate on a consensus basis, but not that veto kind of consensus where one person gets to stop everything. It's a consensus that if we don't have complete consensus, then we go to a 75% vote. That allows us to keep on going. What we also have is we have impaneled some respectable members of the Green Party to do the interviews of the candidates, and all except for Michael Hernandez and Scott Kennedy have either been interviewed or have an appointment for an upcoming thing. And Scott Kennedy, even though I've talked to his wife and she's assured his promises, has not returned the Green Party's phone call. So if he's interested in Thinking Greens, then he should be interested in the active Greens. And there's something wrong. I know he is sick today, but he hasn't been sick every single day of the past 3 weeks, and he has been on airplanes every other day, and he's not returning the phone call. So he needs to return the phone call, because we can't be making the phone calls constantly. We can't beg him to come to an interview. So if he wants to be considered for endorsement, he has to at least return the phone call.
Mm-hmm.
So I really seriously question him trying to address Thinking Greens as if maybe the Green activists and the Green Party, which is huger than ever, this Nader campaign is just catching off, so huge, that, you know, we're somehow not the Thinking Greens. Is it the Gore Greens that are the Thinking Greens? I don't know what he's trying to say. But I really question that literature. And thanks for going over it, by the way.
By the way, what did you think of the Nader Norris interchange?
It was hard to hear. It was a little. He did say that, you know. He did say, of course, when you talked about decriminalization, he did say, well, of course.
Yeah.
And at that point, it'd been nice if there'd been some elaboration. And this time, there was a briefing that was sent to him this time, and I was guaranteed that he would get the material. So I'd hope he would have picked up on it and known specifically about the specific Santa Cruz sleeping ban. It didn't sound like he was responding to our specific situation, and it sounded like you were having to compete with a pretty large room full of people. But he did say, of course, he believed in decriminalization. So I'm satisfied with the correct answer. I'm just not satisfied that he didn't elaborate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Well, thank you.
Sure.
All right, David.
So, my apologies again for misinformation around the Silva matter. I just believe everything I hear in the Sentinel.
You're on Free Radio.
Yeah, I just want to say one more time, don't vote for Scott Kennedy. If you're out there, kids, Merlin says don't vote for Scott Kennedy.
Okay, we'll pass that on. Thank you.
And Scott Kennedy, make sure you call the Greens if you want the support of active thinking Greens rather than bandwagon Nader neophytes. That could be what you're going after there, Scott. I got to tell you that's looking that way. And but maybe you'll call in from your home, or possibly a supporter of yours will call in and let us know just what's cooking. I'm sure that there are a couple of supporters out there listening. Possibly you can clarify the issues if any misstatements have been made about the Kennedy record. Anyway, I'm frankly tired of the whole issue. I spent a lot of time preparing for this show, and of course, as usual, and as I predicted, there was no call from Kennedy. He, on the fifth occasion, he has stood up the alternative media, and he will learn that the alternative media are not to be stood up. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Robert Norris. This is a special show, which we were going to be doing an interview of the one candidate who called us back and wanted to be on the air, Scott Kennedy, but didn't happen. We got now here is a little bit of an interview with a man who was walking with a homeless contingent when the homeless contingent was fired on by the LAPD several weeks ago without warning, without cause, without any good reason. And one of them, actually, Ted Hayes, the man leading the homeless contingent, who I've been critical of in some respects, but certainly don't like to see him getting shot down by police for no good reason. He was hit, fell down, and was taken off to the hospital. Many other people were hit too, as you'll hear from this interview.
All right. So, David, you actually, your camera took a bullet, I should say, a rubber bullet, from the police last night, and you were part of the march that was simply trying to draw the attention of the nation to the need for meaningful programs, or I should say, Ted Hayes' specific program for the National Homeless, right?
That's correct. I was there taking pictures.
And this was around 8:15 or 8:30, and for some reason, the police didn't like what you were doing and started firing at all of you guys. Probably, what was going on there, David?
Well, as far as I could see, the police were scared themselves. And one of the officers' gun went off. And in the process of one of their guns going off, they decided to start shooting. They figured that, I guess, the crowd was going to attack them or something. They started shooting everything in sight, including news media or anyone that was there. And
less than some psychiatric help for these officers. What do you think?
I don't know. I can't say, because I don't know how to erase the problem.
A couple years of R&R?
Well, if R&R would help it.
But how about firing the top leadership of the LAPD? Might that be of assistance?
I don't know either. But what I do know is that the police need a little bit more sensitivity training to ask for how to deal with people rather than to look at them as for as
targets.
Targets, as you would say, or rocks on the ground that they should walk on. Was a target. The news media, if the Pope had showed up, they would have beat him up and rubber bullets him to death.
But that would probably just have been a mistake.
No, it was intentional, because they had no target. It was an accident for the officer's gun to go off, but they realized this was the opportunity for them to start shooting. They had all of this firepower.
They had all this practice. Why can't they do their thing, man?
Right. So they tested it. And they wanted a confrontation, and they got it.
Well, I think you should be proud to be part of this LAPD exercise.
No, not really. Because, I mean, who wants to be in a tragedy? There was no one there creating any problem. If there was, there were the people.
Well, I disagree with you. I think someone there did create some very serious problems.
Yes.
And they got paid to do it over time by the thousands. They were well-armed. They acted in such a fashion as not to peacefully disperse a crowd, but to injure people repeatedly that didn't need to be injured. And also, and this is even more important, to remove their First Amendment right to speak and to bring issues to the American public. That's what really happened last night. Not a big police riot, which also happened, but you were not allowed to do your protest. And bunches of other people were also driven away with the message, be afraid, be very afraid.
I would agree. I would agree. I would go so far as to say that who got the benefit out of the situation last night was the news media. I bet they said thousands of newspapers, the advertisers are very happy that they had a tragedy that was under control. People utilizing their First Amendment rights, the freedom of speech. But this morning, the protesters had been tearing down these $1 million worth of wire and barbed wire fences they had put up, as well as attacking the LAPD. They're standing there with guns and beanbags. And,
you mean this morning or last night?
Last night.
Well,
but the news media said this morning that us so-called protesters, us so-called people that they were there out of control, heathens of the society, were attacking
the dangerous African-American segment of our society.
Well, anyone that was there, African-American, if he had E.T., would have been rubber bullet and beat up, too.
The menacing Hispanic-Latino section of our society.
Well, that's true. Right.
A thin blue line against the forces threatening to overwhelm civilization.
I would agree. Yeah.
Well, I know that their reports reached me, and again, I've only got the media reports, and I heard also went to the press conference of the National Lawyers Guild, which is about an hour and a half before Ted Hayes' press conference, which I didn't get to, which I wish perhaps you can brief me on. But the word from that press conference was there was a small number of people who tried to scale a fence. And the security of the actual protest movement, of whom there were 10 or 20,000 people, was trying to deal with it, but they had been called away because the LAPD decided they wanted to confiscate puppets at the other end of the protest. These big puppets, you know.
Right.
Yeah, you probably heard about that.
I've seen them on the mountain.
You know. And
but how could that be, though? Because I've been over there for the last 2 days, even prior to the event going taking place, to see how it would be set up, because I was going to take pictures. And if anyone knew, they told their Sunday when they had the first march for over there, that LAPD was helping the people stay cool by wetting them down by a spray mist that's on the fence, which that spray mist is on the fence to stop people from getting over there, where they can control the pressure of water that would push anybody off of that fence.
I got my free shower there, actually.
Right, and they keep it as a spray mist, but it's a high-powered...
What I heard was that, and I was actually there when police began to attack a block away, they told people to disperse based upon, first of all, they did it an hour early. The permits for the concert didn't run out until 9, and they told people to disperse at 8, producing a hostile situation. There were a number of people on the other end who were apparently causing some minor problems, 20 or 30 people causing minor problems. You don't attack 10,000 people when 30 people are causing problems. I mean, one would...
And that was an interview from L.A. from a week or two ago when I was down there. LA Weekly came out with a very interesting issue. For those of you who are interested in checking it out online, go to the LA Weekly, www.laweekly.com. One of the stories by John Seeley, ACLU lawsuit says LAPD targeted reporters. One federal lawsuit was filed Monday, and many more may follow, charging that police interfered with the media covering Convention Week protests. The ACLU sued on behalf of 5 plaintiffs who say that the LAPD targeted reporters and photographers covering a post-concert fracas August 14th outside Staples Center. That's the fracas at which Becky Johnson and others were beaten. The complaint, says ACLU attorney Michael Small, focuses only on incidents in which the LAPD deliberately targeted members of the media, clubbing and shooting them. The complaint does not include encounters where journalists may have been accidentally hit in a crowd. This was a critical test to see whether a discredited police department could discharge its duties without violating individuals' civil rights, Small said. The department failed, and then turned on those who were documenting that failure. The complaint, which seeks damages for physical and emotional distress, also aims to require the LAPD to institute new policies protecting demonstration coverage. Other media organizations, including the AP, the Houston Chronicle, and the Hearst newspapers, are not part of the lawsuit, but plan to write letters protesting the abuse their employees faced. LAPD spokesman David Kalish said complaints about the police breaking up the crowd after the concert by Rage Against the Machine are without merit. It would be ludicrous to imagine the LAPD would target members of the media. However, during the incident following the rock concert, it may be possible that media who were in the group were inconvenienced. Plaintiffs include consumer advocate David Horowitz, photographer Al Crespo, and 3 freelancers working with network news crews. Several other assaulted journalists are consulting with their employers and unions before deciding whether to join the ACLU suit, take separate action, or drop the matter. Horowitz wandered into trouble en route from Staples Center to a parking lot carrying a video camera and audio gear after a day of interviewing delegates. It was his bad luck to arrive at Olympic and Figueroa just as protesters and concertgoers were trying to leave the intersection, and police decided to forcefully break up the crowd. As mounted officers moved in, said Horowitz, he ran to what he thought was a safe spot and pulled out a small digital video camera to record the action. As Horowitz recounts events on his www.fightback.com website, though his press pass was clearly visible, an officer, quote, came at me with a baton and shouted, "Move, move, or else." I turned, and another officer swung at me with his baton, while the second officer knocked me down and kicked the camera out of my hand. I shouted, I'm press, please stop." Then a third officer kicked my briefcase into a nearby wall as rubber bullet shots crackled like firecrackers around me. It was almost 3 hours before Horowitz was readmitted to the area to recover his briefcase. While his day's notes were still inside, his 35mm camera and the shot roll of film it contained were missing. Horowitz, who described his long relationship with the LAPD as excellent, found its Monday night actions a shock. "The police attacked the crowd with such ferocity that it reminded me of disturbances I covered in wartime Saigon, where demonstrators were shot by overzealous police trying to control the crowd and their public image," he wrote. Miami TV commercial producer Al Crespo came to Los Angeles to get shots for a photojournalism project on protests. Monday night he got at least 3 shots, rubber bullets to the shoulders, ankle, and temple, fired at close range seconds after he snapped pictures of an officer firing at individuals on a roof where a radio team had been broadcasting. There's clear time on both sides to recognize who we are, who the police are, and who the press is. And you know, we are supposed to have a white flag, Crespo said. I was in Kosovo last year, and I didn't get shot there. I got shot in Los Angeles. According to the ACLU complaint, the nearest protesters were 20 feet away from Crespo when he was fired upon. Audio engineer Greg Rothschild and cameraman Kevin Graff, working freelance Monday for an ABC News crew, were walking backward up Olympic while recording police activity. Suddenly, says the complaint, officers started shooting at the crew, striking Rothschild 6 times and Graff in 10 places, including twice in the head. At about the same time, cameraman Jeffrey Kleinman was filming events in the Figueroa Olympic intersection for NBC from atop a short ladder. After a volley of rubber bullets was fired toward the crowd, one officer in riot gear, the suit asserts, kicked the ladder, shouted "Move!" and hit Kleinman in the chest with a baton, knocking him to the ground. It was really shocking, and I think a troubling display of excessive force by police, said ACLU spokesman Christopher Calhoun. Other reporters incurred injuries during the protest coverage, but at this time are not part of any lawsuits. Houston Chronicle reporter Lisa Tichy said, "I wouldn't want to cover the cops in your city." A veteran of 6 years on the police beat, Tichy was trying to re-enter the Staples area as the 15 minutes for clearing the, quote, illegal assembly zone elapsed. She was told by officers inside the security fence that they couldn't open the gate until all protesters had left, but that her group of about 20 journalists and delegates should just crouch down and wait. However, while huddled in the corner, the group was rushed by mounted officers. A horse collided with the group, knocking Tichy over a cement barricade, cutting her knee deeply. Again, they pleaded to get inside the security fence, says Tichy, but only one, a crying Indiana delegate with a torn dress, was allowed through. Seeking help for her bleeding cut, Tichy was instead ordered to keep moving with the protesters. 6 different officers refused her pleas for help in finding first aid, and she had to walk blocks to the south side of the secured area, being admitted only after the intervention of an elderly delegate. The cut became infected due to the delay in cleaning it out, said Tichy, so I'll have a nice little scar. It should be in the shape of an LAPD badge. Judy Holland, a reporter for Hearst Newspaper's Washington Bureau, said she was clubbed by an officer and knocked to the ground as she was trying to return from the convention to the Marriott Hotel. She had removed her press ID and DNC credentials at the suggestion of several officers at Staples who told her demonstrators might hurt her if she was wearing them. The Chronicle and Hearst have also sent written protests to the city over police conduct. On Wednesday, to protest against police brutality, a cable news network sound technician sought medical attention after being struck in the chest by a police baton during a standoff between police officers and protesters. A 62-year-old CBS TV cameraman was hit in the chest and bleeding during the Wednesday encounter. Still, other reporters and photographers who mingled with the crowd leaving the protest concert area were hit with rubber bullets fired by police. AP broadcast reporter Brian Bland and Flynn McRoberts of the Chicago Tribune were arrested Tuesday night while covering a bike ride protest to take back the streets and relieve traffic congestion and pollution. The 2 reporters were arrested with 35 protesters from the Critical Mass group while cycling through downtown streets with police escorts. They were held for more than 7 hours before being released. Other cyclists were held for more than 30 hours. The 2 reporters and the others were initially cited for reckless driving of a bicycle, but this charge was changed to obstructing a public way, a misdemeanor when prosecutors realized that the recklessness charge cannot apply to bicycles. McRoberts' rented bicycle is still being held by police as evidence. Bland's sound recording equipment and bicycle were confiscated. The AP is protesting the arrest. LAPD Commander David Kalish said the 2 reporters were arrested because they were doing the same thing the protesters were doing. Bland says he wasn't aware of anything illegal going on. Arraignments are scheduled for September 5th. Arresting and assaulting journalists during Democratic Convention Week seems to be a part of a growing trend during protests at large political events, said Lucy Daglish of the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press. Police and prosecutors are arresting and charging journalists for doing their jobs at rates not seen in decades. There's no willingness to give reporters the benefit of the doubt anymore. That's a story from the LA Weekly, this week's LA Weekly. Shoot the Messenger by John Seeley. ACLU lawsuit says LAPD targeted reporters. You can pick that one up if you got a computer or access to the internet, www.laweekly.com. Check it out. There are a bunch of other good stories on that. I got a phone call earlier from 5 to 6:30 tonight on KUSP on 88.9. You can hear a rebroadcast of the Nader speech in case you couldn't get into the packed Civic Auditorium. We have an incoming call, and we are out of here very shortly.
Hi.
Well, we had an incoming call. Of course, as usual, we haven't gotten through 5% of the material I've got here, and that's standard, so nothing strange there. A couple things coming up I want to tell you about so you won't miss them. And, of course, don't miss next week's Bathrob Spears Broadside Show, which will be coming up on Thursday at 6 o'clock in the evening when we return. But tonight at 4 o'clock, as I mentioned before, Scott Bugenthal's kickoff is happening up on Brantsa 40th Street if you want to talk to the candidates and see what's cooking with that situation. That's something you might consider doing. 4 to 6 at 1135 North Brantsa 40. Call-in number, by the way, to this show, which you have 2 minutes to call in, is 427-3772. There's going to be a meeting from 9 to 11 on Thursday, August 31st, of the SCAN Housing and Homelessness Committee at the SCAN headquarters at 314 Laurel Street. Important for those of you supporting the rights of tenants, because the issue of the forum is up for grabs, plus, of course, the sleeping ban, the betrayal, I would say, of all the SCAN elected candidates to act meaningfully on the sleeping ban is up at issue. So that's happening. There's a meeting tomorrow from 4 to 5:30 of the Schmidt Homeless Working Group, as I mentioned before, at the Chamber of Commerce, the Holiday Inn headquarters, where they're situated. And that pretty much is about it for today. I've got to kind of make room for folks who are coming in. I'm going to go out on this billionaire's great satirical ad. Check it out. And do come back and join us again on Thursday at 6 o'clock, or give us a call between times at 423-HUFF. Happy to take any questions, comments, or input from you. Stay with us. Come back again.
AT&T, Philip Morris, Microsoft, Enron, Citigroup, Bell, Atlantic, Anheuser-Busch,
Sprint. These are just a handful of the 66 savvy corporations that have given over $50,000 to both George W. Bush and Al Gore. We don't think there's a difference, do you? We're happy with both candidates, aren't you?
Paid for by billionaires for Bush or Gore, because government should be by the corporations, of the corporations, and for the corporations. www.billionairesforbushorgore.com.
I've got to find another tax loophole for those rich donors before Bush's next fundraising dinner.
We're going to need more campaign cash in November. How can I make the Democratic platform even more corporate friendly?
I know.
What if?
Hey! You got Democrat in my Republican!
Hey! You got Republican in my Democrat!
Not much difference, actually.
Yeah. Two bland tastes that almost taste the same.
Paid for by Billionaires for Bush or Gore. We don't care who you vote for. We've already bought them. BillionairesForBushorGore.com.
Could be Gore.
Who should I vote for?
Bush or Gore?
We don't care who you
we
vote
don't
for.
Care who you
we
vote
already
for.
Bought them.
We already bought them.
Paid for by billionaires for Bush or Gore. Because inequality is not growing fast enough.
www.billionairesforbushorgore.com.
Who are you voting for?
Oh, I've already voted.
What do you mean you've already voted?
I've already voted.
The election isn't until November.
No. Not that kind of vote. I voted with my money.
Really?
Oh, yes. These days people don't vote. Money does. You see, Bush and Gore need tons of cash to run for office. We've got it. And we can get it to them. It's all completely legal. And in exchange, they basically set their policy agendas around our needs. Both of them. It's much more cost-effective.
What if you don't have that kind of cash?
Oh, it's okay. Just wait till November.
Paid with my money. Really?
Oh, yes. These days, people don't vote. Money does. You see, Bush and Gore need tons of cash to run for office. We've got it. And we can get it to them. It's all completely legal. And in exchange, they basically set their policy agendas around our needs. Both of them. It's much more cost-effective.
What if you don't have that kind of cash?
Oh, it's okay. Just wait till November.
Paid for by Billionaires for Bush or Gore. Because it doesn't really matter who you vote for, we've already bought them. www.billionairesforbushorgore.com.
In a vacant lot on 8th Street, a woman digs in the asphalt, crumbling it away to unveil the forgotten ground. Broken bottles and shredded tires, used needles and gun shells. With her hands she bears raw beauty, fire you cannot quell. And the leaves grow greener in Emma's garden, and the roses grow redder in Emma's garden. Impossible color, fed by impossible love. They painted murals on the wall, and a junk sculpture for a fountain. What some throw away, others call fine art. She planted herbs in spirals, said a prayer for each seed. And once a month the twilight comes to bleed. And the leaves grow greener in Emma's garden. The roses grow redder garden. Impossible color, fed by impossible love.